What's for dinner? What's for dinner? What's for dinner? Talking about what's ever on their minds. Talking about what's ever on their minds. Yeah, talking about what's ever on their minds. Whoa, that was a little...
It started out like it was supposed to be some sort of love jam on the radio. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to What's For Dinner, baby. Yeah.
Request any Barry White songs you need.
Yeah, baby. Request some loving here on What's For Dinner. What's For Dinner, yeah. Hey, guys. Welcome to another fun-filled, wonderful, hokey-pokey, alamagokey episode of What's For Dinner.
Alamagokey.
Is that going to be a new word that you start saying?
Very, very probably.
Very probably?
Yes. Not even possibly. Most
very
probably.
Very probably.
Yes.
There's a great chance that I might do this.
No, there's a great chance I'm definitely doing this.
Well, that would be very definitely.
Yeah.
Not very probably.
Hey, I liked very probably.
Well, I am very happy for you. So welcome to the show, guys. I hope you guys are having fun and doing all the things that make you happy. Whee! We have a very special guest on the show this week. We're excited because not only is our guest very funny comedian, as I often have on the show, but also one of our really good friends, like a friend. So this is like the best of both worlds.
This is the most specialist guest in regards to my life that we could have on the show.
That would be
most specialist.
So guestulists.
I'm not even going to touch that one.
And what else is new? Everybody, please put your hands together, and by saying everybody, I mean you, Allison. Jill Michelle Milian is here, everybody.
Yay!
Hi, Jill. That was harmony.
It was.
Hi, Jilly.
Hi. How are you?
I'm so good at you.
Good. She's also plays the gremlins.
No, that's my dog voice. You know, when I see Jack, my dog, I'm like, "Hi, Master Jack." Everybody has an animal voice, like when they see their animals, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, oh, yes. Everyone.
I say, "Hi, babies, hello."
Yeah, and it's always a baby talk voice. It's gotta be.
Well, my friend has one that she lisps to her case. She goes, "Hey, kitty." It gets like all like.
Did the dog have a stroke?
No, it didn't. Oof. That's just her thing. She's like almost like Cartman, like I think.
Like Cartman.
Yeah.
God damn it! I need to go outside and take a shit. God damn it!
Do we have voices for our cats?
They don't have their own voices. I mean, sometimes Bogey's very debonair. We have two cats, Birdie and Bogey, and Bogey's definitely the standoffish one, so she gets more of the debonair voice.
I think Bogey's more the goth chick, just, I don't want to be out here talking to you. I'll be under the blanket in the bedroom.
Yeah. I hate my life.
Exactly.
I don't want tuna for dinner again. Give me death and blood.
Oh my God. Speaking of blood, have you seen that My Strange Addiction show? I just saw one the other day that the woman drinks blood. Like that's all.
It's just so warm. It goes down my throat. It's full of nutrients. And
is it her own blood?
No, it's not her own blood.
Oh, that's even weirder.
It's gonna have it first thing for breakfast.
Whose blood?
The
did she go to blood
part
banks
of
and like
waking up? Mm-hmm. Is someone else's blood in your cup?
Oh, does
refreshing. She go to like blood banks and throw them a 50 and be like, "Give me everything you got that you can get rid of"?
I think because I only saw like the little a little snippet of it. I think that she eats animal blood. Yeah, because that's the only one that's like really accessible. I mean, realistically, I guess she can go down and you got some extra animal blood laying around. You know, like
that's so eerie.
You know what they say: if you can't be negative, be positive.
Ooh, hey.
Oh
my!
Did you say Oy Jivolt?
Oy, not even Gavolt.
It was Jillvolt.
It was Jillvolt. Exactly.
In honor of me being here, Jillvolt.
Wait, so she drinks animal blood?
Animal blood, yeah.
And did she? Because I know in those shows that like they go to see a therapist or something within the episode, and Did they get to the bottom of why she was drinking blood?
Again, I only saw like a little snippet, like a little, yeah, so it got me really intrigued. I'm like, I gotta watch this show. Oh my gosh.
Dude, they have some weird, I've seen one girl who eats dryer sheets.
Dryer sheets, yeah, I saw that one too.
Shoes on them.
Yeah, I've seen the one where she eats a couch. She eats couches, like the foam in couches. Oh. Like, yeah, pretty interesting.
Weird.
One eats clay. I saw one that, like, you know, those potteries, like clay pottery. She sits around and breaks it with her teeth. I'm surprised she even has teeth. She's been eating it like since she was 12 years old, and she's like in her 30s now. And
so like every Pier 1 Imports needs to have her picture up. Like, don't let this girl in.
I remember when I was a kid, I worked at a Chuck E. Cheese pizza. Mm. And if I don't even know if this could be considered strange, but I would like eat the pizza dough raw.
Really?
Like the pizza dough that before
that
you
is
make.
That is a little strange. Yeah.
For some reason, the texture of the pizza dough, and it had this interesting taste. And don't get me wrong, I didn't take clumps of it and eat it. I would just take like little pieces. But throughout the day, I would eat pieces of the pizza dough.
Well, I think we talked about this. I did work at Chuck E. Cheese also.
That's right.
In Miami. And I was like one of the servers in the party area. And my little thing was I would eat the leftover pizza. Isn't that disgusting?
No, we all did that.
Do we? Okay, because I'm like, I thought to myself, like, I was so good. And the birthday cake was so good.
The birthday cake was the bomb. You'd bring out the little circular one, but then you had the sheet cake in the back that you cut up. Oh,
that was
so
like
good.
The most amazing.
So wait, like if kids would leave without finishing it all, you guys would go down?
Yeah, you take it in the back and you eat it in the kitchen, yeah.
Yeah. It was so good. And that's where I was turned on to dipping pizza in ranch sauce.
Ooh, at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite thing in the menu of Chuck E. Cheese? Hmm. The subs.
Oh, you love the subs?
I love the we would make subs at Chuck E. Cheese, but it'd be like with pepperoni and like or bologna and the Italian meats.
Yeah, I think what oil and vinegar.
And you'd send it through the toast, that oven, the on the belt, the conveyor belt oven. It was damn good.
Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese is underestimated. It had some quality junk food.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, it was what it was. What's funny is, like, my job at Chuck E. Cheese for, like, the first year or so was dressing up. I was Chuck E.
Nice.
And I remember, like, I would sweat so hard in that. I had horrible acne because of that job. And on my breaks, because it was just such a pain in the ass to get in and out of that costume. That I would just usually, like the outfit I would usually wear is like the Chuck E. leggings, like the hairy leggings and the feet, and then like a shirt that kind of went over the fat suit and the helmet.
Yeah.
So I'd just take the helmet and the shirt and the gloves off, keeping the legs and the feet on, and I would just go in the walk-in freezer and just cool off in there.
Wow.
But I remember steam would just start billowing off me the second I got in there from all the sweat.
But you
that
were
was
so
on.
Skinny.
I was still kind of chubby.
Really?
Yeah. I was a chubby kid with bad acne looking at Chuck E. Cheese. I had everything going for me back then.
No, but there is something to that. I was, and I know Jill, it's around the time when I first met Jill, I was Scooby-Doo at Universal Studios. And it's really weird. You think that, I'm going to sweat so much. I'm going to be like working out with 40 pounds worth of a suit on me. I'm totally going to lose weight. Couldn't have been more the opposite. I think because you worked at Chuck E. Cheese, which is all nasty food. I mean, not nasty in the way. It's just like it's all not good for you
gourmet
food.
Gourmet nasty.
Yeah, it's the gourmet is good. But also you work at a theme park. It's all garbage food. We get you salads all day. Salads are the worst part of any of those menus. So, yeah, it's
Scooby.
Acne and, Scooby.
Oh,
Scooby,
my God,
Scooby.
I remember that. Allie was
doobie.
Scooby. Yeah, Allie actually took me for the first time to Universal.
That was the very first time ever going.
Very first time ever going. It was the most amazing time, too. We had so much fun. That was great.
Oh,
I've heard the stories.
We had more fun on the Simpsons ride than the kid behind us. He was looking at us like, what is the big deal? I don't get it. And we're like, yeah, woo!
Like, lighten up, 8-year-old. Yeah. Goth. Calm down.
8-year-old's such a dick.
He's a dick.
He's like, this total ride where I'm, you know, being thrown about and I'm in a virtual reality. This is just the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
Seriously. Get something original here.
Like a teacup
I could do this
ride.
At home. You know, the teacups still stand the test of time. You go to Disney, I still smile in the teacups. I have fun.
I can't do the teacups anymore. I don't know what happened to me. Like, when I turned, like, 25.
Were you molested? By a teacup.
I think I was molested by a teacup.
Be your guest. Be
it was
your
a
guest.
Mad Hatter.
Pull your pants down. Here's your breast.
Woo-hoo. I used to sing it a little bit differently. I don't know if we can. Can we curse on this?
Oh,
you better effing
absolutely.
Fuck believe
okay.
it.
I used to sing this, and I still do. When I hear that song, "Be our guest, be our guest, put your pussy on my chest," like always. I don't like. I was a disturbed child.
I heard a different one. That's funny. Yeah. I heard, be our guest, be our guest. Lay your head upon my breast. Suck a nipple. It's divine. It tastes just like wine. Suck a dick. Eat some cum. Why fuck 10 when you can fuck 21?
Wow. Da, da, da.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
Song. No shit. Wow, yeah. Honey. I'm impressed.
I still remember it. I learned it when I was
impressed.
Seven.
I'm impressed with that song. It was the best with your tits and your pussy. And I think I'll try the rest.
That's good, babe. Off the top of the head.
Off the top of the noggin there.
How funny. But Jill, we must have been in the same crowd with our Disney... There were with the Disney parody garbage song.
Yeah. I totally would garbage it up every single time. I mean, how can you not? Because
I think I told you that when I was single, I used to tell women I was the voice of Gaston to hit on them.
Yes, I think it was brilliant.
Yes, it was the best pick of. Hello, I'm Gaston. Would you like to come back to my hotel room with me, Belle? Like, oh my God, you're Gaston? Serious? And I had this whole backstory because I was like, when that movie came out or when it was at least recorded, I must have been only 11 or something, but I said, no, I've always had I was always able to make my voice go really low, even when I was a kid, and Disney thought it was really cool, but they never said, and the girl's like, oh my God, you're so cool, I can't believe you were a guest star.
Who would have thought that that's like an aphrodisiac for women? Yeah, like, oh my God, Gaston. See, it translates cartoons. Translate. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, I'm sorry. There is, my sister used to work for, I don't know if you guys even know this. She used to be a head of a huge porn company in Miami. And you know, it was kind of a secret thing with our family, but she was the head editor and she made so much money and we would have porn all over the house and she would help me, like, I'd have to proofread some stuff for her.
Yeah,
and,
I love it.
You know, and, so, yeah, seriously, you should put cunt in here instead of pushy. Like, you know, it was like, that's like, it was ridiculous. So I'm so sensitized to the whole thing. Yeah. And she brought home a bunch of movies one time because she had to rate the movies. And she's like, can you help me? And I'm like, oh God. And the only one that I actually was like, oh, I think I'm kind of turned on was an anime. Mm-hmm. Was an anime porn. I went, this is hot. Like, whoa.
They make them crazy because no holds barred.
Not at all. Like, there was do you ever see the movie Heavy Metal?
No, I don't think so.
Heavy Metal was like, it came out in like the early 80s, and it was kind of like, it wasn't quite what Japanime is now, but it was definitely that Japanimation kind of style. And it had like, I remember specifically John Candy was a voice in this. And it was like kind of like rock science fiction cartoons, but very sexually graphic. Like,
wow. John Candy was, I
think his character, he was like a nerdy kid. And there was a meteor that fell down to Earth, and he touched the meteor or something, and it either made him a stud or it made him gave him superpowers or something. And he's fucking all these women, and they showed penetration. And I remember watching this as a kid, going, "Something's going on down there."
Yeah.
Wow, I feel something really dingly. And that's like the only time John Candy could have ever been a sex symbol. He's like, "I'll just lend my voice to it.
Yeah.
My voice will fuck the shit out of you."
Yeah, but you'd be surprised. You know, these guys that are so unattractive and, like, you know, doing comedy and we go to these small towns, how these gorgeous girls will throw themselves at these most disgusting men because they're like, oh, he's famous. You know, it's really kind of oddly bizarre.
I think it's people wanting to feel like they're part of that fame world any way they can. Like,
yes, it's weird.
Yeah, like, I mean, I won't mention names, but I worked in Miami and West Palm Beach with a very famous actor and comedian, more for the acting than comedy, but not a very attractive guy, yet women were just clamoring to get near him and kiss him and, you know, and say, oh, let's go back to your hotel or whatever. And
yeah.
It was very bizarre to watch, very entertaining at the same time, too. It's like, you have no self-worth, do you?
None. But they really, they go brag about it afterwards, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a bucket list thing. I don't know.
When you were single, did any, like, when... Because this is interesting, because you're a female headliner on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from just me, when I was single, not that I'd get laid all the time, but there were a lot of times when women would be blatantly flirting and hitting on me, and hey, you know, if the stars aligned, we'd go back and have some fun for the night.
You mean the vodka aligned?
Whatever aligned. Yeah. The stars, the vodka.
The tequila.
As a female on the road, did you get, did you do a lot of that?
Well, I think that's why I can actually be in a healthy relationship now, because I got it all out of my system. You know, it was kind of like that thing where you get on stage and you scan the audience and you're like, you. And then afterwards, you know, everyone's coming up and saying, you know, oh, great job, this and that, or they're buying CDs or T-shirts or whatever. And, of course, I would zero in on that person, and they would come up and they'd be like, hey, so what are you doing after? Let's go, let's all go have a drink. They're like, really? Okay, awesome. And, yeah, I had my fair share, and I can honestly say, thank goodness I was safe, because there's a lot of times I look back and go, God, I was ridiculous,
like,
in these small towns. Like, that was just stupid. But it's out of my system now. I have no desire anymore.
Me too.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't have said it better myself. I'm glad I got it out of my system in my 20s and early 30s.
Yeah.
Because, I was, when Allie came along, I was ready.
Before, it was, like, the time that I did, the transition of saying no more for me was when everyone had the smartphones and could upload immediately to YouTube. That's when there was a turning point for me, that I said, this is too easily, like, if I get too wasted, whatever, someone can whip out their phone, and it really causes damage in your career. And especially, you know, there's some people that are addicted to the damage, and that's what their fame is based off of. But I don't want that to be what my fame is based off of, you know? So it was that turning point where you're like, you know, this is not, it's not even fun anymore at this point, because you're like, the risk is too, there's sometimes there's risks that are awesome and you want to do it because, oh, the risk is amazing. But this risk was like, yeah, no thanks. Nah, nah.
No, I totally understand. Like, I think I'm not sure if I talked about this on the show before, but the last girl that I slept with before I met Allison was, I was on the road. I was in Alaska and basically met this girl at my show. Actually, I met one girl at my show, and then this other girl pretty much cock-blocked her friend and said, you know, you could stay with her if you want, but if you want to get laid, you know, I want to fuck you. And I was like, well, you win. And if that's not a way to close the deal, I don't know what is. And I went back to my hotel room. We had fun for the night. And then I remember when we were done, I went to the bathroom to, you know, throw away the condom, and it had ripped. And obviously nothing, you know, this was a couple years ago, so everything's all right. But I remember at the time, I'm like, holy shit, what just happened? Did I just fuck my life up? This is some random girl in Alaska.
See, that's the scary thing about being a boy. I have always thought that, because I used to always go around and go, yeah, if I were a boy, I'd be such a whore. Because you guys, man. And then you think about it, and you're like, no, if you're a dude, imagine this, Allie. Like, you're a dude, and 10 years later, you get a knock on your door and they're like, hey, so this is your kid. I just want to introduce them to you. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That is the worst feeling in the world. Like, I can't imagine living through life going, oh my God, am I going to ever have a knock on my door? And there's going to be some girl standing there with a child that, Jesus, you know, like, that's mine. Like, that's scary.
With how many times you shoot your gun, you know, it's like, what if you did hit things?
It's a scare. Like I said, I had this just flood of just images, like, my career's over. Well, my career's over, but like my life is, I know it is over, all this. And then I drove her back to her apartment, and this was, I think, 4 a.m. Alaska. So it was like 8 a.m. in Florida where my brother was. And I called him. I'm freaking out. I was like, dude, calm down. And I just said, you know what?
He's like, throw her down the stairs.
You're like, the kid's already here. Yeah. Throw him down the stairs.
That's awful.
Punch her in the gut.
Right in the schniz. But I said, okay, you know what? No more of this. I'm waiting till I meet somebody and I get in a relationship with them. And over like the next couple of months, it was a girl that I'd been wanting to sleep with for years who was blatantly hitting on me and saying, let's go. And I said, I can't. I made a promise to myself and I can't do this. And
good,
I never got to sleep with her. And I almost made it to Allie. I met Allie in February the next year. January, less than a month before I met her, I just broke down. I'm like, I got to get laid. Because it had been almost a year.
Oh, homie. I see. I've done the one where I've waited like 6 months, even though if my family's listening, I'm still a virgin. But but in my Hollywood world, I waited I think it was like 6 months. I went on the a little long spree, and then, of course, I had to break down too with like a 22-year-old. Of course, they're so shiny. I can't help it. And
mine was a contortionist.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
You were like, I will never get this opportunity to fuck a pretzel again.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Did she get into a pretzel?
Well, there was something salty on her when I was done.
Jesus,
but,
Lord.
What?
Hey, now.
You soon? Put your little Mr. Peanut right in her pretzel.
My little Mr. Peanut?
Yeah.
Do you picture my penis with a monocle now?
But it's got one eye, doesn't it?
Touche.
See, you guys are great. See, like me and my boyfriend, we're sitting here, and you guys know him so well. Yeah. You know, and he loves you too. I would be getting jealous right now. Really? I am so. I know everyone has a past. I know everyone does, and it's, you know, it's just life and everything. But I don't know. Like the hairs on my head stand up. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know what I turn into.
You turn into an old Englishman? Like,
I'm going to kick your butt. Like, it's like weird. I get so overprotective. It's bizarre.
I think I've always been sort of desensitized to, like, you know, people having their experiences with other people to the point where I'm like, oh, yeah, it's fucking, yeah. I hope you nailed it good. You know, yeah. Like, and it's just, I'm more like, I get to be the boy with him. Like, the boy side of me gets to come out and kind of, like, coddle that part of his life.
Know, I think it's also parenting. I mean, your parents are really great, and so are yours. Like, it's like, my parents are so strict.
Really?
Yeah, so strict. So it's like, I grew up with that. And then also they, you know, there was accused of course, of divorced, of course, you know, my mom's Irish, dad's Bolivian, of course, you know, they didn't last. But there was so much fighting and so much jealousy and so much. So I think it was instilled in me that that's what a relationship is. Like maybe, yeah. And so it's hard to break away from that because you're a child, you know. And
heavily influenced by your child. Yeah,
totally. Like I think like. You know, and I've had to curve my beliefs, but I thought, like, when you love somebody, you throw something at them when you get mad at them.
Like, yeah, that might not be a universal thing.
But see,
yeah.
That's how my mother learned, too. My mother learned because her parents did that. What's funny is that she did try to, like, raise me with a separate mindset, but if I ever told her, like, my open thought process, she'd still be like, oh, my goodness, you're a lady. Like, she was grown up in, like, the lady times. Oh, I'm sorry. But, yeah, so the idea that... yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's a hard thing to you know, tell your mind to, you know, not worry, you know, if that's something that you like think about. If in hearing that you have, you know, past your partner has past relationships, it's
yeah, I told him, I said, listen, you are a virgin and I am a virgin and this is our first time.
Yes. So. And it's moving forward. It's moving forward.
Well, the way I kind of look at it, like, because Allie, I mean, she's told me about her past and she knows my past. And I always feel like what happened in our past made us who we are now and brought us to where we are now.
Absolutely.
And I love who Allie is and I'm glad I met her when I met her. Mm-hmm. That I, whatever happened in her past, I don't mind hearing because I know that I'm her future and everything that happened made her into the person that I love.
You are a healthy man.
Oh, it doesn't make you not healthy because you don't think like that. It doesn't make you not healthy, though. It's a very normal. Most people, like when we talk about the things we talk about, they're like, how are you able to talk about these things? I mean, we even keep, like, I'm still close friends with my ex-boyfriends and he's still close friends with his ex-girlfriends. And I know for a fact when he's talking to certain people that he schmutzed. And he, you know what I mean? And it's like total. I always think about the idea that if he loved somebody, that love truly didn't ever die, but it's different now. It's like a friend love. It's like a kind of. So I never want him to fuck with that kind of a connection relationship, and I wouldn't want him to fuck with mine.
No.
I think that's that's really, it's a healthy way of thinking because I still, like, I can't watch The Bachelor without getting upset. Like, those, like, seeing how girls can compete and knowing that, hey, he just made out with this one. I'm like, that's when I totally turn Latin. I'm like, excuse me, you know, I can't believe him. He just totally kissed the other girl. Like, I go crazy. It's horrible.
Oh, no, you didn't, Mr. Bachelor.
Yeah. Do you want to kiss me in the mouth after you kiss her? I don't think so. Okay.
That's different, too. Probably because the Latin roots, you have, like, a fiery... You have a fiery, you know, passion. So it's different.
Yeah, it's there's a we don't the cool thing is you know, we don't ever hit each other, like, you know, but you just throw things at each other and, you know, and then the makeup is like, da da da, I love you so much. You know, that's how I grew up. And it's like, it's scary because, you know, even thank goodness. My boyfriend is totally okay with it. Like, he watches me, and he kind of watches me like he's watching a TV.
Love it.
You know, and then he just lets it play out, and then he's fine, you know? And that's great for me because before there would be other relationships where they would you know, intersect and get mad or whatever. And it just causes more. It puts more fuel to that fire and it gets even bigger and better, you know. And my boyfriend just sits back and he just watches me and I do it. And he's like, okay, are you done? Okay. Okay.
Oh, I love it. Well, because he's Jewish and we're very analytical. We're
yes.
Like, now, why are you so yelling like that?
We're also non-confrontational. So we're like, you know what? I just would rather not get involved.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know.
When Allie and I argue, we've never thrown anything at each other. We've yelled a few times.
Because I'm afraid I'm going to break it and I don't want to be out the money.
Nice. That is good. But I'm saying, like, our fights are, like, they never get to that level, so our makeup is never really, it never is that high passion. It's more like, sorry. I'm sorry, too. I'll work on it. So will I. Okay.
Goodbye.
Chicken.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I love exactly. that. We need to put, like, a little webcam in here, and it'll be, like, therapy for everybody.
Oh, my God. Oh, but you'll see. We get stormy, and he'll storm out, I'll storm in. And we'll just, it'll be an hour later. We'll come in, and the funniest part is that we'll have the most pursed lips, like we're trying to trying to stay as angry as possible. And then one of us will just like, I don't know, fart. I love it. If this was the Newlywed Game, we would have just totally
High
stole
five.
The house.
Speaking of fart, I had one that sounded like an alien yesterday.
It was like.
It sounded like a drop, like bloop, 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 bloop. Like it was so strange.
We were watching a video of us on the road. We were actually in Anchorage.
That's right.
And we were videotaping. It was like really cold, and we're videotaping like us outside in the snow. And we come back in, and I'm holding the camera like this with the two of us in the shot. And Allie was talking. I just go, hey, wait a second, and I just fart on her. But it was like the loudest, most like it was like a two part. It was like a, like just like that. And I'd forgotten that I did that, so we watched the video, and I just started laughing my ass off. Like, and because she just goes, "You're an asshole." She didn't.
The look on my face, it just sunk. I just was like,
"This
okay,
is my life.
This happened.
This is real." Yeah.
Well, and it's just interesting because farts are so funny. It does not matter. You know, my father's always like, that is so disgusting, you know, but I think they are just hilarious.
It's natural.
Even
it's human.
Even my dog, like every time
Little
if I
Jackie
fart,
farts?
No, well, Jack will look at me like, what the hell was that? What the, it is, I think it's so funny because even he's shocked. He can hear any noise. He can hear ambulances. He can hear whatever, door slamming. But if I fart, he's like, what the, and he looks at me like, what is that? Where did it come from? Like,
and then a second later, he runs out of the room. He smells it. He's like, yeah. I'm out of here.
Yeah, he's like, oh, hell no.
Oh, that was
gross. Have you ever seen when an animal, like, scares itself? Like, it farts, scares itself?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It farts. It's like, what? And it's, like, smelling its butt. I'm far away. I'm
know,
sorry.
But you're yelling into it.
I don't mean to yell.
Yeah, for those of you listening, I know we're already like 28 minutes in. There have been, I know, a lot of variations in the sound. I've been trying to keep everything mixing as we're going along. So if it gets louder and quiet, if it had been doing that and it does again, you know why. Because I'm adjusting
adjust
for my
Alice.
Wife going,
yeah. But you know what it is? I can't, when the thing's far away from myself, I can't hear myself. So that's why I'm like, oh, I should probably go close. Now I can hear myself.
Well, yeah. Just remember, when you scream or laugh,
do it like this.
Not like this.
I'm guilty of it too, though.
I know. As a comedian, you should know your mic technique.
I know. Sometimes we like to blast our ears, though. Surprise.
So, not to turn the subject solemn for a second, but for those of you who listened last week, you know that I reran an episode of the podcast with our good friend Scott Kennedy. Yeah. Who I had on the show last year, and last week I reran that episode just to honor Scott because he did pass away on the 14th of this year. Were you very good friends with Scott?
I actually dated his cousin for a while.
Wes?
That lived with him.
You dated Wes?
Yeah. Are we outing this now?
No,
no one knows about this.
Yeah. No, I think I remember this.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my.
I think Wes is a great guy.
He's sweetheart
super
of a
sweet
guy. Yeah.
And everything.
I remember that. That's right.
Yeah. And so I was around Scott quite a bit during that time. And I just think the world of Scott. There's not a bad bone in his body.
No. Not unless he fucked a bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
a bad bone.
But yeah, he was, and he's very funny.
Oh,
really? Just,
you know what I think is amazing? Like, if you go to Scott's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/comicscott, you'll just see endless postings from not just comedians, some who knew him well, mm-hmm. some who never met him but heard about him, but also from troops overseas, because Scott went over there over like 50 times to Afghanistan and Iraq. To
amazing. And hats off to him for that, because I know you've done some work with the troops, right?
I went once with Scott. He took me over there.
Yeah, I admire comics that go over there, because I'm just like, is there a plug for the hair blower? Like, I'm just like, I'm sorry, there's too much dirt over there. I anything for the troops here in the United States, I'm fine. But I just, I have a fear. I have a fear, especially being a female. And there are females that go over there, and everything's fine. There's something about it that it's like, ugh. And so I admire every comic that actually goes there and performs for the troops, because I know they don't get, you know, they don't get anything over there.
You know, Jill, it was like, it really, they say, you know, it's a life-changing experience, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, I'm sure. It really is.
No,
because
I know,
you go over there and you see, first of all, you see how these, and I say kids, and I mean that because some of them are 18, 19 years old. Mm. And, I mean, they're men and women, but, you know, how they live over there, you know, and what they're doing for a cause that they feel is right, you know, and that cause, just, you know, say what you want to say about government and war or whatever, they're doing that to essentially protect us.
Yeah.
And they're so appreciative. When because we went to like a couple of big bases like in Kuwait, but then we went to they call them FOBs, forward operating bases, which are pretty much just makeshift man-made bases in the middle of the desert, you know. And these guys are isolated, and they only have each other, and they're being, you know, shot at with rockets or with bullets or whatever. And for us to come there, it was like, it's like bringing a piece of home to them.
Yeah.
And it meant that those trips meant more to me than any other show that I've really done. Nothing against any audiences I've played, you know, played at. Just there was so much of an emotional connection there.
Absolutely.
And the fact that Scott, you know, did that so many times, you know that his heart was just so big and so giving.
Yeah, because even, you know, as a comic, we, you know, being especially a stand-up, because it's live, you know, you have that immediate gratification. We kind of thrive off of that, you know?
Yeah.
So I can just imagine what it's like when it's full of gratitude, you know, in the audience. Because a lot of times you go to these clubs or a theater, and there's people that are just like, whatever, he's not that funny. Oh, or she's like, whatever, I've heard that joke before. You know, whereas if you're, like what you were saying, you know, you go there and these people are just like, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
There's not anything that is judgmental at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. I can just imagine how wonderful that must feel as a comic, because that's our main mission, is to see smiles on people's faces.
Exactly.
And that's what keeps us going.
Exactly. And you know, I got lucky because I didn't, as I heard like stories of guys, oh yeah, I had to sleep in a tent, you know, and there was a sandstorm coming, and, you know, or I'm sleeping in a sleeping bag just without a tent, just on the ground or whatever. I stayed in just really nice places. Like, it was almost like, with the, and when I say exception, I mean like the one thing that might have been a little roughing it was I stayed in like a wooden kind of like cabin, and that didn't have like a TV or anything.
Meanwhile,
in Kuwait, it was like you're staying at a hotel. And another point, we had a couple of days off, and we actually stayed at literally a resort.
I've had friends comics that had stayed at like Hussein's Palace and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I didn't get to do that.
Yeah. There's some like amazing stories that come back from comics. There's something, you know, it's kind of like that thing where they go, "What's your biggest fear?" And people go, "Sharks or whatever, whatever." And mm-hmm. I'm just like, it's that for me. It's to go.
Is it because you're in that country, or is it because you think it's going to be like literally roughing it?
I think it's what it is war for me. It is such an emotional, and it's a horrific thing. It is probably one of my most distasteful things on my list. Like, I think it's just repulsive. And I know what the troops are doing for us and our freedom. And look, to live in America, it is such an amazing blessing. But war just makes me want to vomit. And I get nauseous when I think of war. And that's why I think physically going over there, I don't know, I might have a panic attack or something. Like, I start to get even hot thinking about it. Yeah, I think that's what it is more than anything. That's why I go, hey, in the United States, if there's anything I can do for the troops, you know, absolutely. But it's just being in that presence of hatred and, you know, guns and...
So you don't really... Like there wasn't any hate. You didn't hear guys go, I'm going to bless that sand monkey or whatever. You know, there were actually Iraqi citizens who worked on the base. Mm-hmm. They had their own... There was a very, as far as I saw, there was a very mutual respect for mm-hmm. other cultures going on the base and everything. And there was never, like, I don't know if I'm lucky or whatever, but there was never any attack when we were over there, you know, and you always felt safe because you're being fucking surrounded by the military. Right. And there were, you know, everybody's carrying a gun, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, when we go to the cafeteria, you can't, you got to make sure your gun's not loaded. So.
Yeah, I think guns in general too are freak me out. Like when I went to Bolivia, because my family, my father's side is from Bolivia, and they walk around with these huge machine guns around mm-hmm. their sides, like it's nothing. They're like at the mall and they're walking around, and I was like, oh, like my knees would get weak. It was just, it's, I don't know. I must have like some kind of past life or something, have some weird, like, horrific connection to that.
Well, no, you're also a peaceful person, and I think that to peaceful people, to watch the rest of us just be so confused and be so angry for reasons where, like, we understand that, and it sounds so hippie, but that's love. Like, everything needs to be in a love and a giving and a respect of you know, everything around you mm-hmm. and the anger. It's like everybody's so freaking lost in their thought processes. And it's unfortunate that that's where people go to, that I must hurt you because mm-hmm. I don't understand you, or yeah. I must hurt you. And look, I have nothing against anybody who fights for the country. And I know that a lot of these people really want to do it, but I unfortunately think that most of them go into it thinking that they're going to be doing one particular action, and in turn they're used for money making purposes, and they're just the mobsters of the world pushing their brawn around to get things to happen the way that they want it to happen. Yeah. And so it's, from a person who's a peaceful mindset, I don't even like to talk about the troops. Like I give them respect because they are the ones who are helping, but a lot of them come back and they go, you know what? I learned a lot about what's going on in the behind the scenes, and to being used to try to help democracy in certain countries. You're not being used for that. You're used to guard opium fields because Pfizer needs their product. Yeah. And you're used to make, you know, you say that there's a camaraderie with the Iraqis and the soldiers. Well, to a certain degree, I think that's because they're all in business. There's a lot of business going on. And then we have the attacks, the people who are angry at America, and they're fighting, and all the fighting that's going back and forth. It's, I don't know, it's like it's all just part of what's given to everybody. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go fight them because they're fucking assholes.
I think what it kind of comes down to is, you know, you have that opinion about things. And Allie and I, we've both seen, like, films and interviews where some soldiers talk about that. But I think when you put that aside, and as a comedian, as an entertainer, when you're over there, you don't think about that.
Absolutely.
You
yeah.
know, you really yeah. don't. You just see the look in these guys' faces, and men and women in their faces, when they just can relax and enjoy yes. a show and just go, I feel like I'm back at home.
Well, I think once you get there, it's not about that anymore. It's not about the
politics.
Individuals.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's a loving connection between humans,
yeah.
what you're providing.
That's yeah. exactly what it is. And I think that's the ultimate gratification, you know?
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, if you ever have a chance to do it, it's just one of those kind of badge of honor things, I think, as a comedian.
Yeah.
It's like I and I'm not saying this against you or any other comic, but I just know for me
you
personally.
Are. You are.
Huh?
You're being an asshole.
Oh. No, well, in that case.
I'm just kidding.
Cunt. Do it for your country.
Yeah.
You can't. For me, it was like for me personally, after that happened, I'm like, okay, now I feel like I'm a comedian. Because, wow. like, I remember, like, you know, Bob Hope would go over there all the
yeah.
time. And I remember as a kid watching Hope do some specials for the military and everything. And I remember going, wow, so that's what comedians do. You go over there. And then you get older and you start getting the business. You hear about guys going overseas entertaining mm-hmm. the troops, and how suddenly there's this, I don't know, from what I saw, like, these guys suddenly, other comics would look at them with a little more reverence and a little more respect. And I'm like, that's something I need to do that at least once to just... to have that kind of experience under my belt as a comic. And I don't think I would do it again, only because I'm a pussy. And it kicked my ass. But I'm glad I did it that one time.
Yeah, you know, maybe there is a point in my life that I'll be like, yeah, as of now, I still, you know, it's still a very shaky
and it has nothing to do with you being a female comic. It's just that initial, like, disdain for war zones.
Yeah, it's mainly war. But I also do have those images of what they do to women, you know, and it's like, that's always a difficult thing for me as well. Like, it's, you know, the culture is so different, and if I know that you're so safe because you're with the troops, but my gosh, if you got pulled away, just like that reporter got pulled away in Egypt, you know, from
They're in the field. You're literally on bases. We never went into public areas or anything like that.
See, I'd want to go shopping, like
go to the market.
No. You don't understand. They're kidnapping. I know, but their shoes over there.
It's only $2, $2 American. That's there, nothing.
Did you not see Sex in the City 2?
Yes.
I could go to this market and meet Aiden again.
The fact that you know, you just outed the fact that you know the plot line.
Because you and I watched, you made me watch that one night
I
in a hotel.
Make
you made me. I wanted to stop. You go, well, we might as well finish it. We're halfway through it.
Well, I mean, I'm the person that if you watch half of a movie, you got to finish the movie.
Really?
But
yeah, crap movie.
Yeah,
it's a horrible movie. But yeah, no, I told, and I have respect. I don't want it to come out like I don't have respect for what every person that goes there is for and what they're doing. And their hearts are so big. That's why they go. They go because their hearts are big and they want to help people. Mm-hmm. And I think that and especially, God, Scott going over there as often as he did is just such an incredibly heroic and loving, you know.
You know, this is my move. I posted something on Scott's website. I don't remember if I mentioned this last week before I played the rerun of Scott, but to me, this is what personifies Scott Kennedy and his love for the troops. When we were flying back from Iraq, we're on the plane ride, and it was like 11-hour plane ride. And during the plane ride, there were a bunch of soldiers coming home for various reasons, and apparently one of them was this, I don't remember how old he was. He couldn't have been more than 23, 24. He was going to get, he had like a bad heart, and he was going to get surgery. And on the return flight, he actually passed away in mid-flight on the plane. And I remember Scott was, at one point, me, Scott, and the other comic on the tour, Mark Sweeney, we were kind of all gathered. And, you know, it affected, I was surprised how much that affected me, like, just after experiencing all that with the troops and then finding out this kid died, it's just like I was a little shaken. And Scott goes, listen, he pulled us over. He goes, listen, guys, I might not be going back to L.A. with you. If when we get to New York and we have to go through customs or immigration, if there is nobody who can escort this body back to his home, I'm going to do it.
Wow.
He's like, and if because military, military who've fallen hero, always needs to have an escort back and within the military. And Scott was just so, his heart was so for the troops that he said, I will escort them. And he didn't care about how it screwed up his own travel plans or the fact that it's going to take away from any rest time that he would have, which was rare to have anyway for him. He was that dedicated to the troops, you know. And luckily there was somebody who was able to escort, but he was without a second hesitation.
You know,
that's what made him such an amazing person, not just comic.
No, it's beautiful that you can actually share these stories, that he has these amazing stories. So it's like his voice, even though his physical body has passed on, it's like his voice is not going away. And
not at
all. I appreciate you sharing that with everybody, because these are stories that, you know, people think, you know, as comedians or as performers or whatever, like we live in this like this world of like ha ha ha, ha la, 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 you know, and it's, you know, we're probably the most sensitive human beings, I you know.
Yeah.
And so it's that connection is so beautiful that, you know, he had that connection with the troops and that it didn't matter. And I think that goes for me saying too, like if there's even anyone that is in the audience and something would happen to them, I would stay there to make sure, like, is person okay? Like, is, you know, it's not like, okay, my show's done, I gotta go. See you later. Like, we are so, because I think it's as comedians, we're so vulnerable already. Because, you know, we're putting ourselves, it's just us and the mic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're putting ourselves out there and we're sharing things with them. And it's really up to us. If they're laughing, they're laughing because it's funny. If they're not laughing, so every person in that audience that is a connection to us, you know, in return, you know? So I always feel connected to an audience. That's why doing shows that are just like crazy and a bunch of drunk people and they're not listening and stuff, I'm like, why am I here? Because I'm not a comic about like an ego. Like, I want to go up on stage just because I want to hear my own voice. You know, it's I want to go on stage to help these people escape from reality. My pain is therapeutic to make you laugh, and we're all connected. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's a beautiful story. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks, Scott.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. He was really, I think I told you this too. We were actually, I was supposed to be working with him the day after he passed away.
Yeah. Cause I think you're the one that actually, you're the one that kind of told the rest of the comics by posting that on Facebook, because a lot of us didn't know. And you, since you were going to be working with him, I think you were one of the first people to know. And I know reading your feed is how I found out. And
oh,
I
really?
I was like, what?
Yeah,
I
found out like on Twitter from another comic posted something. And I was like, Allie was there. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck? She's like, what's wrong? I said, read that. And she's like, what? And I called his phone first and it went to voicemail. I'm like, fuck. And then I went to his Facebook page and I saw the initial post from.
And you said his picture was still up.
Oh, like, yeah. Scott's picture. Like, I was there Thursday because I had to do press really early Friday, which was the day. That Friday night was our first show. So Thursday night, we see that. And yeah, his picture is still on the poster outside the club.
Oh my gosh, you had to go Friday morning to radio and
I was like, don't say anything about it, because Allie could attest I started bawling when I found out how true it was. And I'm like and I'm radio going, be professional, don't get emotional. Just, and that only one DJ said, so who are you working with this week?
Oh, great, yeah.
And I kind of went, and I looked, because the guy who was taking me around from the hotel, I told him about what happened. I just looked at him and I go, I really don't know. And I just left it at that, and the subject changed.
Which was true, because you didn't know who the filler was, who was going to fill in.
But
so,
like, for a second, my brain went, well, to tell you the truth, I'm like, no, don't. It'll go in a weird way, and just keep focused. But after my show on the first set, I mean, after my set on the first show, I knew I had to say something about Scott on stage. So I kind of just let my mind go, and I basically told the audience what happened. And ask that they give him one more round of applause.
Wow.
And they did. And it was it was my own way of saying goodbye to Scott and kind of honoring him in the best way I could, which was on the stage that he was supposed to be at that very day.
So. Did you totally just break down?
Not on stage. You had a baby voice crack on stage.
Yeah, a couple times my voice kind of. I posted it. Allie was able to tape that bit. So
oh,
it's
I'll
online.
Have to
yeah,
watch
and
that,
there's a
yeah.
little couple times that I kind of had to hold something back. Because I didn't want, because I mean, it was a great show and I didn't want to end it really weird, but I thought that kind of tribute was the best way to handle it.
And you said it very eloquently, very succinct, and it wasn't like a big sob fest. Everybody didn't all of a sudden, but he said, I was supposed to be working with somebody because the other gentleman had mentioned and he was just in a clutch. Mm-hmm. And he just said, the comedian was going to be here, passed away yesterday, and I have a feeling he's here, and I just want to give him one more round of applause. It was beautiful.
Oh, that's so great. Oh,
yeah, like, because I would imagine people would pick this up, but comedy is a very close community. You know, we're all, with the exception of some bitter pricks out there, we're all kind of rooting for each other, and we're all in the same family.
Yeah, you know? It's you know, everybody has a story, I think, with a comic, like, especially, like, you know, we all have those generations, and you know mine and your generation is one, and there's some younger comics now that have come in the clubs and you're like, I don't know what that is, but our whole generation, I mean, like, even when I first started, when I was like standing in line for open mic nights, it was me and Jeff Richards, from Mad and SNL, and we used to take turns to, like, okay, you're gonna stand for 2 hours and I'm gonna come back and stand for 2 hours. So we always, everybody has these stories of this next generation that came up, and we're all connected. Like, yeah, so I had a story with Scott. So when I heard about this, it wasn't like it was like, oh my god, oh, I don't know who that is, but oh, that's so sad. It was like, oh,
holy
whoa
shit,
oh my, what? And the same thing, Mitch Mullaney is another one that I was close to, and it was like, ugh! Like, you're just like these incredible comedians that are so funny that share and give laughter, you know, worldwide. And it's like, and they're gone. And it, but again, I have to sit there and go, it's the physical loss. And that's always hard. You know, you have to, you're going to mourn the physical loss no matter what. You're going to, because we're human. Like, there's no way to be like, oh, and so, and just all be spiritual immediately. There's just,
exactly.
It's too hard. But again, there, you know, then you're able to focus. Oops.
Are you okay?
Hello? There,
I always regard death as being, and especially when it happens suddenly and when it doesn't seem to have an answer as to why it would have happened so suddenly. I always think of it as a class. Like right now, you are taking Jill Michelle Million class. He's taking Flip Schultz class. I'm taking Allison Weber. Whenever my class is supposed to be over and I've learned all that I was supposed to learn, whether it be good or bad, it's going to end, the class is going to end when it needs to. And then I'm going to be free to take a new class because I am not Allison.
What if you failed Allison? Yeah, what if you got an F in Allison? But you have to repeat Allison over again?
Red F with a circle around it.
You know what? Then, then I would be put in another scenario. The main eternal me will be in another class that is either pieces of Allison or something so...
They were like,
this way didn't work. Let's try this way.
Pieces of Allison was also Jules' follow-up album that did not do very well.
Ooh, did it not?
Pieces of Me.
Pieces of Me.
Pieces of You, sorry.
I like the Jewel, and I like the feet.
But with the Sex and the City and the Jewel thing, but...
he knows all this shit.
I like Jewel outing myself, but with the Sex and the City and the Jewel thing, but...
he knows all this shit.
I like Jewel and Fiona Apple as well.
He's half a gay man, but the straight half is the half I get to play with, so it's perfect.
And then the gay half, we watch musicals.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh, I dragged Andrew to a musical the other day, and oh, poor guy.
What'd you say?
It was a show that a friend that I met in acting class, Stephanie Hunt with Megan Mullally, and I always say her name wrong. Megan Mullally. And it was, they sing these like real fun, like kind of like jazzy Louisiana type music, and they just have a ball, and it's a really good time. And I was like, oh, you got to go with me, Andrew. You have to go. And he was like, oh. And I said, you know what? I'll go by myself. He's like, no, you're not going by yourself. You're not going by yourself. So he enjoyed the first couple songs. And then afterwards, you know, it was like nails on a chalkboard for him. Poor guy. But I love that he is able to participate, even though he's like, I can't. He's there to support me. But he did acknowledge. He's like, they're really talented. It was a great show.
Well, if you ever want a guy to go to a musical with you, just call me.
I will. Now that I know that, yes. I kind of knew that before, but I didn't think about it when I had the tickets. I was like,
oh, it's okay.
Yeah. I need to take Flip with me and we can sing musical.
Go have fun. There's like a few musicals I can stand, but that's something Flip and I don't
really
share.
So you don't really care for them that much?
It's not that I don't care. It's that it really depends. Certain ones grab me and certain ones I'm like, I can't wrap my mind around. It's just too cheeseball-y.
Let me entertain you.
Actually, that's my favorite. Make you smile. No, Gypsy's my favorite, and that's because Gypsy's so funny all the way through. I mean, especially the Natalie Wood, Rosalind Russell.
Whores.
Oh, it's very funny.
Because it's about whores.
It's about whores. You whore. Whore. I actually did Gypsy. I did Summer Stock,
I was Gypsy.
Oh, that's right. You were Gypsy Rose Lee. Another thing we have: Chuck E. Cheese and Gypsy Rose Lee. Chucky Rose Lee. That would be awesome.
We need to come.
Let Gypsy, me entertain you. Let me give you pizza.
Gypsy E. Cheese.
Gypsy E. Cheese.
Gypsy E. Cheese.
Hey,
You had mentioned Jeff Richards and everything. You were also on Mad TV.
How
many? You were like the first Latina woman.
First and only meaning cast member, Latina
cast
member.
What's her name?
She was featured.
Oh, yeah. She wasn't a regular cast member.
No, she came on after, and she was featured.
Who?
Oh my god, that's horrible.
She does the nail salon.
Yeah, the nail salon.
Oh, Alex Borstein?
No.
Funny that you go to Alex Borstein.
Wasn't she? Miss Swan. Angela Johnson.
Angela Johnson. Thank you. There you go. But you were the only full cast member.
Yeah,
Latino
full cast member, which I totally, I'm so honored because I can say that forever because the show's canceled. So.
I remember when, the first time I think I ever saw you, not even live, you was on Mad TV doing your Drew Barrymore.
Oh, yes.
And I remember it was like a roundtable discussion sketch.
Yeah, politically incorrect.
Was it? That's what it was?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And I remember specifically going, God damn, that is a great Drew Barrymore. And then
I saw you
at Melrose, and I think my opening, like, were you Drew Barrymore on Mad TV? And you're like, yes, I was. And I was like, oh my God, you're really great.
I was Flip Schultz. I love you guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Are you serious? No.
Hey, which everybody can see, she's hanging half her mouth, which is the even funnier part, is the facial impression as well, which is hard on the radio here.
I don't know. I love Drew Barrymore. And I always think like this. I go, you know, we're 1 degree of separation. Because I've met Tom Green, you know, and she's got to know. She's got to know who I am, like, because it's like Drew Barrymore, that's what I'm known for, is doing the Drew Barrymore impression, and I love her, and I have not met her yet.
Really?
No.
Oh, did you ever see that movie, My Date with Drew?
Yes. Yes.
I thought maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah.
Just make a website.
And yeah.
Like
and
my impression of Drew.
My impression of Drew.
And document that.
My impression of Drew. Hi, guys. It's Jill Michelle doing Drew Barrymore. I love her. She's like, you know, she's like adorable. One of those girl crushes that you have. Like,
oh, God.
Total girl crush. Her, Kate Winslet, total girl crush. Like, I'm just, and I, you know, I don't know if they could term me lesbian because I don't know if I have it in me. But however,
well,
girl
why don't
crush,
we
yes.
try? Allie?
They'll try to
go put on your Drew Barrymore mask. And Jill,
and
just
put
see what happens.
See what happens.
See what happens.
So go ahead.
Now, were you like picked in a club? Like, did somebody, an executive Fox, see you in a club, or did you just go in for like a audition for that?
It was a long process. It was, I think it was like over a process, like a whole reign of like a year and a half.
Really?
Where I would go in and I would go to all the producers and do all my impressions, and then they go, okay, and then they would just keep in contact with my agent, and then they would go, when is she performing, blah blah blah, and then again, like, you know a few months later, they do, I do the same thing, go on and do all my characters and everything. And then the last time I did all my characters, and I had to do them, like, I went back like 7 times.
Really?
And it was like a performance every time you go, because when you do all your characters, and by the end of it, it's like a half hour audition. And so I went back 7 times the last time. There was a bunch of people in the room, of course, and they had people come out, see me do stand up, and it was, the timing was right there. The girls have gone out. Alex went off the show, and I think Nicole Sullivan had gone off the show. So they were really hungry for a female, and I had been under the radar, so they went ahead and gave me they did an on-camera test with me, and that's where I got to do Drew and Britney Spears on that season. And then the next season, I came back, and they made me main cast member, and
Yay.
It was so amazing. You know, however, I learned a lot on that show. I learned that in business, you know, because I was young, you know, in business, you just can't show up and do your job and go home. I realized, oh, you got to hang out with people. I didn't know. I mean, I was exhausted. I would be performing and I'd be doing my thing, and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go home and go to sleep. And they're all going out for drinks, you know, and I didn't know that that's what I was supposed to do. So
so you had to force yourself to go out with drinks.
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't. So I didn't connect with the people. And I, you know, now being in the business for, you know, 13 years, I realized, you know, you do want to work with your friends. You know, at the end of the day, you don't want to, even if someone's fantastic, I want to work with someone I'm going to have coffee with or have a drink with after, or want to sit on the couch and watch a movie with.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get that. I thought, you know, a job is a job. You go there, you do it well, and then you go home. And now I'm like, oh, that's where I messed
so
up.
So how far into stand-up were you when you got cast on that?
3 years. I was a baby in stand-up. I was mainly doing impressions because I came from a sketch world. I came from a very toured with Coconut Grove Playhouse, you know, which is like the Broadway of Miami.
South Florida, yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, I very, very serious, but comedy was always how I dealt with pain and everything. And then, and Florida, there really wasn't many stand-up. There was Uncle Funny's at the time.
That was my, and, that's where I started.
And Comedy Zone, remember
Comedy
that?
Zone in South
yep.
Beach.
Yep, in South
awful
Beach.
Awful club. Awful.
Awful, awful.
That room was set up so awfully. Oh, it was like a long rectangle, and you performed in the middle of a rectangle.
Yeah, it was bizarre. So you can't really develop time. I couldn't develop time, you know, there. So I went more into sketch, and I went into this troupe that actually performed in Miami Beach, in South Beach, and then would go to Fort Lauderdale.
Mental Floss?
No. It was called Punch 59.
Oh, okay.
It was the show. And they were great. They're a great group of people. And I got really owned into that sketch world. So that's what I knew. So coming out here, stand-up was a way for me to get on stage, because the sketch, I enrolled in like the Groundlings and Second City and Improv Olympic. And, you know, it was classes mainly. So you're not on your feet and really performing for an audience. Mm. So I was like, I got to do stand up. I need that immediate gratification from an audience. I need to know, like, hey, good job. Like, you know, we're the most insecure human beings, like
totally.
Comics. Like,
totally.
You need the pat on your back. Like, you know, it's so great. You know,
see, it's not just me. You see that?
Yeah.
I never said that it was just you, obviously.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because my boyfriend always says, he goes, you should know how great you are. I'm like, no, I need people to tell me. I needed to.
You know, so like I had this, like last night, as I know my listeners know, you know, I am a medical marijuana card holder. So last night I was a little medicated. And sometimes when I get really kind of medicated, I get very introvert, like very, what's the word?
Introverted.
Not introverted.
Introspective.
Introspective, thank
introspective.
You.
Okay.
And I started thinking, like, why did I want to be a comic? Mm. What was it? And I'm like, you know, the laughter, oh, that's great and everything. But then I realized it was recognition.
Yep.
I want recognition.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I started. That's when I was a kid and I started. And I'm like, it's not that I didn't get a lot of attention. It's just I didn't feel like there wasn't anything about me that garnered recognition except when I made people laugh.
Yeah.
And I realized that was the only time I got true recognition from my friends or whatever. So that's what I craved. And that's what kind of pushed me into stand-up.
I found for me, you know, after years of therapy, I found that the reason that I got into comedy was that first time where and that's why I even have a bit about, you know, spreading peace. And, you know, if you see someone at the grocery store or Starbucks or whatever, and they're complaining about life, just go up behind them and put your hand on their mouth and just start humping them. Like, you know, and you go, shh, be quiet. And but that's where it kind of stemmed from. I was a little girl and my grandmother would yell at me and I started dry humping her. And
that's great.
I was such a little girl, and I would just dry hump her, and she would laugh. She'd first get mad and then start laughing. And there was that was the point, I think, that it just switched for me. Like, I go, there's power in laugh. If you can make someone laugh, mm-hmm. you hold the power, you know?
Yeah.
Because you break the tension, you break the anger, you can break everything with laughter.
Yeah.
And that's where it stemmed from. It was a powerful thing that when I would see people laugh, it would give me that recognition mm-hmm. of like, oh, I did that. Yeah.
It is a very powerful feeling especially when you're like in a club with hundreds of people and you're able to take this group of essentially strangers, people who don't know each other, and suddenly you are able to hold that focus of a couple hundred random strangers and get them all to come together as a group and evoke laughter out of them. It is an incredibly powerful thing, which is why I think, depending on what kind of the gender of the comic, people are attracted to that.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, this person is powerful. I want to be close to that power.
Yeah.
So it is a very very powerful position to be in.
Yeah, and I think it's you know, it is a man's world, you know, still the comedy, but the women were coming in. It used to be like, if a woman was in comedy, she had to like be really heavy, you know, and be like a character, blah, blah,
right.
blah. And now it's just like, there's pretty girls in comedy that are funny. And I think the best gratification for me is after when women in the audience come up to me and go, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Because I'm relating to them and it's that thing of like, you're me, or I know a friend that's just like you. And thank you for that. Because now it's not like kind of taking them out. Like, oh, if I'm going to laugh at somebody, it's only because you know, they look a certain way or blah, 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 you know, or she's a character, blah, blah. That's what's funny. You know, I'm not funny because I, you know, look like everybody else, you know. So it's nice to for them to go, thank you, you know, to show that, hey, you can be expressive and be fun and be normal and be mm-hmm. whatever, you know.
Absolutely.
I just love it.
You know, and everybody's telling their initial story of how they got into comedy. And because of this guest here, I must oh, say yeah. this. That everybody out there that knows me as a comic, I would not be a comic if it wasn't for our guest. Nice. I was always a silly and comedic person who assumed that I would involve myself with, you know, comedic acting, like sketch comedy, improv. I was going to Groundlings for a while. And it wasn't until Jill Michelle Million saw me play guitar and be silly and just make up silly songs. She says, "You, this is great. You should write it down.
I gotta tell
it
you,
on stage.
It wasn't even that. I was so damn jealous of her.
Oh God, stop.
I'm serious because I can't play a musical instrument. There's something, my fingers don't do it. I even bought a guitar over like a year ago and it's set in the closet and I'm like, I'm going to learn.
Oh
and
my God, I'll help you.
I need it because I am so in awe of people that can do music, and the fact that she could do music and was so funny, I felt like, you know, you're doing a disservice to, you know, to this world by not, you know, getting up on the stage and sharing that gift with other people. And so what we did was, I used to have a show called Jilly Online at the Improv on Melrose mm-hmm. Improv, and Mr. Flip Schultz and Miss Allison Weber were both on the same show, and I don't think that was your first one though.
No, I had done one yeah. prior with you, and I remember it so vividly. It was in December of 2008, and she brought me on stage while you physically talked and explained, you know, I'm your friend and I'm going to be doing some songs, but you set up the song and then I would do it, and I knew it was my test.
Yeah,
it was
and
my
I test stayed, to see I stayed her. On stage with yeah. you. Yeah. I stayed on stage just to yeah. like to be there to hold her hand if she needed it, you know, yeah. or whatever.
And I basically just sang, which was all I felt comfortable with. So I was like, oh, great. She's going to introduce him. It was perfect. And that was my test. And after I did, and I knew that, after I did okay, she said, I'll put you on another show. And then she actually put my little face on a little flyer, and it was like my first big show. And this was what was great. My mom actually flew in because it was, I mean, so big. My name was actually going to be on the list of people performing. And mom flew out. That happened to be a show booked with a Mr. Skippy Green, who mm-hmm. we'll meet later on the show.
Yeah.
And but then I loved how you handled this too. I don't know if I ever really told you this, but I assumed all the way up until minute and a half before I was getting on stage that you were coming on with me. And I said something to her like in the corner. I go, hey, when we go on stage, can you just say blah, 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 blah? And she goes, oh, no, I'm not going with you. And I went, what? And she says, yeah, you're on your own. You're a comic now. I went, huh? And all of a sudden, I in like fucking 70 seconds had to come up with anything that I would say in between my songs. I mean, you really it was perfect though. I had to think on my feet, and I did okay. And it was almost from then I was,
just so everybody knows that's listening, I do not do that with anybody. Oh, and you have only been the person I've ever done that with, still to this day. Oh. It because I
you're gonna start getting emails like, hey Jill, will you help me?
No.
this was a fluke, guys.
This was something that, you know, as a person, when you connect energies with somebody, and I connect, it was a very synchronicity, I guess that's even a word. I like to make up words.
Okay, good.
But it was something that I don't do that, because when you put somebody up, let's say you put somebody up or you tell somebody about somebody and they go and they have a meeting on your behalf and they suck, you know, that's all on you and your credibility, you know, and it's, but with Allison, it was like, it wasn't even a question. It was like, no, you're doing this. Shut up. Like, no.
Oh, I love you.
Yeah. And then, you know, we've seen now what, you know, the outcome was, it was like, you were going to be on stage because you were going to meet, you know, Skippy. That's Flip. That's, you know, that eventually you guys are going to be doing shows together. You're going to be married. You're going to be. And who would have thought to be able to foresee that, you know, but without a question, it was like you're getting on stage.
I love you. But that, I mean, I think I've made mention of it. I swear I've said your name a few times on the podcast before and been like, yes, she's a good friend of ours. Jill Michelle Million. She's the one who started me.
That's because of Jilly that you and I met. And
you gave me my whole life. Do you want my firstborn? I don't know. What do you
mean? I'm responsible for two people fucking all the time. Yeah.
All the time?
Who's that?
Yeah, exactly. All the time?
But by the way, speaking of people who fuck all the time, it is now time for a little part of the show called The Skippy Green Show.
Oh, yeah.
It's The Skippy Green Show.
Let's try that again with a little more volume. It's time for The Skippy Green Show. Let's try that again without so much volume. It's now time for a little part called The Skippy Green Show.
It's The Skippy Green Show.
Jilly Michelle Million.
What's that on your lap?
It's pussy. It's a big, hairy pussy that's scraping me and making me bleed.
Oh, I'll get off you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, get the fuck off of me. What with your razor sharp clit?
Sharpened just for you.
Jilly. Yeah. So good to see you. Especially with your clothes on for a change.
Thanks.
I'm kidding. Take them off. Take them off. All right, Jilly. This little part of the show. I'm going to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to answer the question in 10 words exactly.
Oh, gosh. I can't count.
I'll help.
Allison will keep track. Not 11, not 9.
All right.
10 words exactly.
Boy, the
pay attention to the question.
Okay.
If you could blow a guy behind a department store. That's right. What store would it be? And why?
If you blow a guy behind a department store, what store would it be and why?
10 words exactly.
Gosh.
Okay, which one?
There is a lot of pressure here.
There is.
Executives are listening from different department stores.
All right, I'm going to do this. Fred Segal's, because it's clean and I can get cappuccinos.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love this girl.
She's brilliant.
She gets foam on her face and she gets foam in her coffee. That's a good girl.
She knows what's up.
Jill, thank you so much for doing the show.
Oh, thank you so much, you guys.
Where can people find you?
JillyOnline.com.
JillyOnline.com. And you got Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, which is JillyOnline.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And Allison?
DirtyGuitarGirl.com.
There you go. Oops. And Twitter at
Allison Comedy. That's all is on comedy.
There you go. And guys, you know my shtick, my spiel. FlipIsFunny.com, Facebook, Twitter, all that fun stuff. Go see my movie, 30 Nights Paranormal Activity, Devil Inside
Girl
with
Dark Attack.
Yeah, that's right. Jilly saw it. It was fun. I think that is it, guys. We hope you enjoy the show.
Yay.
And tune in next week.
Next week.
It's going to be a fun time. We'll see you guys. What was that? Too geeky or something?
No, it was perfect.
Okay, thank you. And we will see you guys. We will see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Talking about whatever on their mind.